So thank you so much, Adira, for giving the time to talk to you. And now we'll get started. So can you please share with me your preferred gender pronouns and during what year you were accosted?
Yes, so she, her, AI.
And during what years were you accosted?
So I was accosted in like 2001 to 2007. I did my bachelor's in social work. I graduated in 2003, and then I took a year off and I came back and did my master's. And I was there from 2000, I think, 4, and I was supposed to graduate in 2006. I did walk, but I didn't finish till 2007.
Okay. And did you come as an undergraduate, as a transfer student or from high school?
No, as a transfer student.
Okay.
Yeah, I graduated from high school and then I went to Trade Tech, where I was there for almost 3 years. And the reason for that is because, I mean, I was undocumented and I really
Right.
did not know how to maneuver or do, the whole process. When I graduated from high school, this was back in 97. And so when I graduated, we still did not have AB 540. We did
Right.
not have DACA. We didn't have any of that. And so, of course, everybody's pushing you to apply to colleges
Right.
and to do everything. And for me, I knew I was undocumented, but I didn't really knew what that meant. And it wasn't until my senior year where people started talking about college. And I know that I did want to go to college. I wanted to go to UC Santa Cruz. And it wasn't until then that I found out the meaning of what being undocumented was, because I went to see the college counselor. And basically, right away, she told me, "Oh, you can't apply for college. There's nothing that we can do for you." And that was it. I walked out of the college, the what is it, the college office, or and I was just really disappointed. I had a teacher who was one of the electives, woodshop, and he basically was the one that pushed me to continue. And I told him my situation, and he basically said, "Well, there is a way." And I was surprised, to be honest, because young senor mayor, Caucasian, and he basically told me that he knew someone at the office at Trade Tech, and that I could come in under the Leticia A law because I was not 18 yet. And because I graduated at 17, my birthday's not until November. And so apparently we could qualify under our parents if they were legal or in the process. And so that was the case, and that's how we, my twin and I, got into Trade Tech.
Oh, okay. So you
Yeah.
were a twin.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so beautiful. Let me backtrack a little to you, to your family background, where you're from, where did
Okay.
you grow up, how you got here?
So I always say I'm from Nayarit. But my birth certificate says Puerto Vallarta, Jalisco. I was only born there.
Okay.
I was only born there. Again, I am a twin, and back in 1979, which is my year, my mom is from Nayarit, Las Varas, Nayarit. And so she needed to be rushed to a bigger hospital because she was carrying twins and there was a bit of danger there. And so she got rushed to Puerto Vallarta. And that's where she had us. And then we came back to Nayarit. Okay. So that's pretty much all I know, Nayarit. And so I was there till the age of 10, almost 10. And then I was brought here to the U.S. Mm-hmm. My parents separated a year after my twin and I were born. Okay. And so my mom had to leave us under the care of my grandparents, maternal grandparents. And while she went to Puerto Vallarta to work.
Mm-hmm.
And we will see her according to them, we will see her every other weekend because she was busy working. And then when we were 5 years old, I don't remember anything, but when we were five, she decided to come to the U.S. and she left us with our grandparents. Mm-hmm. And so we were there for another five years. So do I have a recollection of my mother? Not really.
Mm.
My parents, to me, were always my grandparents.
Right.
My grandpa ended up dying in 2009, but to me, he was mi papá, mi papá.
Right. Mm.
And my grandma, I just went to visit her. She just turned 90.
Oh, my God.
And to me, she's my ama.
Right.
She's my ama. Yes. So... yep, that's where I'm from. And I came to the U.S. again, July 1989, I think July 28, 1989. And we didn't know we were coming. So I have an aunt that went to visit us. Went to visit my grandma.
In Nayarit,
mm-hmm. Yes. And my grandma, at the time, my grandparents at that time, they had three of their kids still living at home. Mm-hmm. And my grandparents had 10 kids, 11, but one of them was killed. So they had three still kids that they were raising. And then they had five grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. And they were racing as well?
That they were racing as well. And so it was five of us. And two were from this aunt that came to visit. And then my mom, too. And then another aunt who had one more child there.
Mm-hmm.
And so my aunt came, and she came with the purpose of taking her kids with her.
She was living in the U.S.?
Yes.
Aunt? Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so she went to pick up her kids mm-hmm. and to bring them here. And not until like the last day did they mm-hmm. tell us that we were also coming.
Oh,
and
okay.
So we were happy. We were shocked. There were so many emotions. I mean, finally I was going to be able to see my mom. So I was mm-hmm. really excited. And so we traveled by bus all the way to Tijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And that took a couple of days, and it was really, really tough. And I don't even know. But so that we wouldn't get dizzy, right?
Uh-huh.
Nos dieron de tomar a little bit of gasoline.
Okay.
So that could help us with any upset stomach or anything. I don't know if it worked, but the thing is, we never got dizzy.
Okay. That happened a few.
We never got dizzy.
Okay.
So we made it to Tijuana. And from there, everything is just really confusing, to be honest. From there, I remember that my aunt left. She left us with un señor.
Mm.
Ese señor met with somebody else. And next thing we know, we were in a car.
Well, the children were
like, yeah. Okay. So it was the four of us that came with them, and they had other people. I don't know how we all fit in that car, but my cousin, my mm-hmm. male cousin, él lo pusieron en la cajuela.
Mm-hmm. Were they around your age or younger?
My cousins are at least three. My male cousin, he's 3 years older, and my female cousin, she is 2 years older. So around the same age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And my cousin was in La Cajuela with somebody else, and then they put two of us under the sea. And then my sister and I and somebody else was sitting on, you know, on the regular sofa and or back seat, and then the two people in front. And we just drove for a long time. And next thing I know, it got dark and we stopped by at a house. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't remember where, but it was a house and there were a lot of people there.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave us food. And I fell in love with hot dogs there.
That was your first encounter with hot dogs?
Yeah, that was my first encounter with hot dogs. And they ran out of ketchup.
Oh, no.
So I had to eat it with mustard. And so that's the way I eat my hot dogs, with mustard.
No ketchup.
I don't really like the ketchup. No. And then from there, they told us to, I remember they told us to rest.
Mm-hmm.
They told us to get dressed and to make sure that we wore everything in black.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of the night, all they just said was, keep running. We got out of the house and it was to run and run and run and run. And I didn't even know what we were doing. You know, I didn't even know what we were doing. And I just remember running for a long time and being really tired, and I fell. And my sister was, you know, helping me to get up, and, you know, and I got to the point where I was crying, you know, mm-hmm. I was crying because I was so tired, mm-hmm. so exhausted, and I don't even know what we were doing. I don't think there was any explanation as to what we were going to do.
Anything.
We were just dropped off, and that was it. Next thing I know, you know, it was morning time, and we had run for a long time, and a car came, picked us up, and, you know, the person that was there started talking to us and saying how, you know, he knew my mom and my aunt, and, you know, he just dropped us off at my mom's house, and that was it.
So you were running through the night, and just next thing you know, you're with your mom.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I'm like, I don't even know what happened, what we did, nothing.
Yeah.
But that's how we came here. Yeah. Would I do that to my kids? No way! No way! You know, just leaving them like that with strangers?
Yeah.
No, I will never do that. I mean, I myself have a 10-year-old and a 8-year-old. So, no, I don't know what my mom and my aunt were thinking, to be honest. But I know that I'm not the only one. I know that there's a lot of kids, mm-hmm. that's how they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were lucky that, you know, we weren't held back, and that no immigration didn't, you know, get us or anything, because it was just, I remember being at that house only, mm-hmm. you know, that afternoon that we got there, and midnight, it was time to run.
Yes, it is a story of many, many of us, many children that have gone through that.
Yeah.
Yes. And I imagine the parents have really big motives for, you know, putting their children through that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad that, you know, we had.
That you made it safe. You
that we made it safe, mm-hmm. and overall our experience was.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, you get to try hot dogs.
Yes. I love hot dogs now.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I know that, that's powerful, and it brings some type of feelings and emotions. Thank you.
Yeah, but there's still a lot that I don't remember. Do you know what I mean? I just vaguely remember these things. The running, I remember because I fell,
mm-hmm.
and I remember crying, and I just didn't know what was going on. And the house that we stayed, I remember because of the hot dogs. you know? So, yeah. So, I wish I could know more, but that's all I really remember.
Do you think it has to do with detachment, the kind of detachment, that situation? Because you didn't know what was going on?
I think part of it, yeah. Yeah, not knowing exactly what we were doing, mm-hmm. or why we were doing it, you know? All my aunts said, was, we're leaving tomorrow, and, you know, you're going to get to live with your mom. And, you know, as a almost 10-year-old, I mean, if you have never lived with your mom, it's like, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. And I clearly remember that there was a neighbor who had brought his wife, and she was white. And because my aunt was from here, and she had taken her little girl with her, who at that time was like 4, and she spoke English. And so I remember going to this neighbor's house, and I wanted her to teach me English. So
in Nayarit, or once you were?
No, in Nayarit. Oh, okay. Yeah. So I will go and I will sit with her, and she spoke a little bit of Spanish. So by the time I came here, I already knew my ABCs and the numbers up to 10. So, you know, I just did it for fun, you know. Okay, I was doing it for fun and to learn something, but yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so tell me, you got here, you're a 10-year-old with your twin, you've never seen your mom. How was the change?
It was not what I expected, not what I imagined. Mm-hmm. You know, I had created myself this wonderful life with my mom.
Right.
You know, who was going to be loving, protective, who was going to be the best mom ever, even though I didn't know what a mom was. And so I came here. When we came, my mom was really dry, unaffectionate. She was already married. She had another daughter. We are 7 years apart, so she was about three years old. And I personally never felt that I never felt part of a family. I don't know if you can understand. I always felt like I came in to a family that was already structured. Yes. And so that made it really hard. And so it was, of course, the first couple of days, everything is nice. But after that, it was very, very, very sad. My mom ended up slapping me on the first week. And I was terrified. And my whole, you know, what I had imagined just, it went down. It was just not what I was expecting. And so my mom actually slapped me because, and I remember I was at a laundromat, and my mom basically, to be honest, on the way here, when the bus ride to Tijuana, I kept on asking myself, should I call her by her first name? Should I call her mom? You know, mama, what would I call her? And so I had made my mind that I was going to call her mom. But as the days went by and I didn't get that affection, that connection, that day at the laundromat, I decided to call her by her first name. And so she slapped me and she told me, don't forget, I'm your mother. You need to call me mama. And it was a hard awakening. Once I knew English, you know, and I learned how to say mom, I started using mom to talk to her. And I will say mom, mom, because to me, that created a distance.
Right.
I wasn't really saying mama. I was saying, it didn't carry so much power or endearment. It was just mom.
Right.
And that's what that's how I addressed her by, mom. And my mama is my grandma.
Okay. Used to call mom, your mom here.
Yeah, you know, I do. Sometimes I call her, hey, mom, you know, or ama, you know, I will say, mom. I'm learning more to say, you know, ama, but for the most part is mom, and it's very quick to the point that she won't notice it that much, you know what I mean? So if I call, hey, mom, And then I'll go on with whatever I need to say.
Interesting. So that family environment was difficult, challenging to adjust to, right? Yeah. But you had your twin with you.
I had my twin, but it was, how can I say this? In Mexico, we were there together. I mean, we slept together. I mean, my grandparents were very poor, so all the kids slept in la sala or whatever right. It was called, mm-hmm. la sala. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine from one wall to the other, it was the whole kids.
And row of children.
My mom, my sister, and I were, you know, always slept next to each other. Mm-hmm. And that was the only time that we got affection, because we will cuddle with each other, you know. We will get that warmth that we wanted from each other. But my sister had issues with hearing, mm-hmm. and so she was always set back academically. Mm-hmm. And so in my town, what they will do, because there were so many kids, they had right. a morning session and an afternoon mm-hmm. session. And I went in the morning session, and my sister went in the afternoon session. Mm-hmm. So there was hardly any interaction. And to be honest, era una niña vaga, curiosa, you know, and I will leave the house at 7, and you wouldn't see me coming back home till probably 8, 9 o'clock.
Oh, wow.
Where was I? I was visiting neighbors, friends. I was walking around the whole town, playing around with the kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, we played so much outside. You know, la pega la trae, las escondidas. Right. I mean, so many things mm-hmm. that we did that when I came here, mm-hmm. there was none of that.
Right, right.
None of that. Mm-hmm. It was all just being locked up.
Right, yeah.
And I got depressed. Mm-hmm. I got depressed, not only because of the big change. Mm-hmm. I was also upset because the kids had told me that las calles eran de oro.
The kids back in Nayarit.
Yeah, the streets were made out of gold, that, you know, everything was so fancy and everything. And it was just like, it was a lie. So I was disappointed in that sense and all of that. So it just made it really, really tough. And so I became depressed, and I started school, and gosh, school was another thing. In Mexico, I wouldn't say that I was a good student. In Mexico, I was, si me pegaron los maestros, si me pusieron orejas de burro, you know, si me regañaban mucho. I was very disorganized. I never brought in my homework, but there was no one really there. To push, right? You know, to push me, to tell me that I needed to do these things. And so I can mm-hmm. say I was like a C student, you know. And I was okay with that, and everybody was okay with that. And in coming here, our first school was it was so my parents lived in Long Beach. My mom lived in mm-hmm. Long Beach with her husband. And from Long Beach, we came late to the school, right? And so the only school that was open was in Lakewood. So we will have to be bused to Lakewood. Okay. And we went to a school where it was only white people.
Right. I was about to say, Lakewood is all white at this time.
Yeah, it was mm-hmm. only white. And I remember specifically, mm-hmm. they had two or three classes that were supposed to be ESL.
Okay.
And that's where they placed us. The teacher and the student aide, or the aide, uh-huh, uh-huh. were white, and they did not speak Spanish.
Of course.
And everyone in the class, we were a mix between Cambodian, mm-hmm. between, I remember there was two girls that were from Brazil. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just a mix of different ethnicities, different races. Mm-hmm. But at the end, we couldn't really communicate.
Because they were so different.
Yes. You know, it was hard to communicate mm-hmm. with them at the same time. And those that you know, the other Latinos or the other students that spoke my language, I mean, I couldn't get them to help me to communicate with the teacher. So I don't know if it was anxiety or what it was, but mm-hmm. I cried those 6 months. We were only at that school for 6 months. And I cried every day. Every day I cried. Mm-hmm. And I guess to cope, I needed to go use the restroom. And I will cry because the teacher wouldn't let me go to the restroom. And again, it was that communication. And so yeah, I will yeah. ask other kids how to say it, but they wouldn't know either. So it was just a really tough situation. And once I learned how to say it, then I didn't understand what the teacher meant. So I will ask her, can I go to the restroom? And the teacher will reply, yes, you can, but you may not. And I didn't understand what she
right.
meant.
Right. Anyway, yes or no, right?
I did not mm-hmm. understand what she meant. And so I will cry even more and more and more. I remember I peed myself once. And then after that, I think she knew that I was serious about going to the restroom. But she will always tell me the same thing until I learn to say, may I go to the restroom? You know, and it was very tough. Mm-hmm. And we were very different from the other students. You know, my mom, ay, con las medias, con las calcetitas, con los zapatos de charol, con los vestidos zampones, right. con la trenza. We stood out. We stood out. And once we were there, it was embarrassing at times, you know, to be wearing all of that and to see everybody else so different. But I think the rest of the students knew who we were, and you know, and I never got mistreated or anything, but it was just or if I did, I don't, you know, I couldn't understand. But yeah, so I learned English. Basically, they will sit us down in a circle. And for the most of the day, we will listen to, they will sit us down to listen, and we will listen to all of the stories and rhymes and stuff, and they will make us repeat it, and that's how it was. So a lot of Humpty Dumpty, Mary Got a Little Lamb, all of that, it was just constant hearing. Yep.
Hey, do you remember how long it took you to learn basic English enough to communicate a little better with the teachers?
Yeah, so I, from there.
You came into elementary school?
Yes, so I finished fifth grade here.
Oh, okay.
I finished fifth grade. So, yes, so I do have my, my diploma from that school. Yes. And then from there, you know, we went to middle school. And I remember that by middle school, you know, I was a little bit better with my English.
In Long Beach,
still in Long Beach.
Do you remember what middle school was that?
Yeah, that was Franklin Middle School. Mm-hmm. Franklin Middle School. And my elementary, I think it was Hollenbeck. Let me see. Mm-hmm. Elementary.
And at this time, are you with your twin at the same classes? Or?
No.
No.
So I was the one that was able to move ahead, and she was always behind. Okay. She, they found out that tenía roto el tímpano, okay. And so they had to do extensive surgery, but that had already played a role in, you know, in her education. That played a role, and so we were always in different classes, never really together. Mm-hmm. I was able to get out of ESL in the 10th grade, and mm-hmm. she was in ESL throughout high school as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened, you know. In middle school I did okay. So I went from being a C student to becoming an A student, and okay. And I'm not trying to show off, but I think a lot of it was, and it's sad to say this, but a lot of it was that I was competing for my mom's love, you know? And so now it was like, for the first time, I was competing with my twin sister, you know, to get that attention. And then she also had the other little girl.
Right.
So it was just hard. Maybe I was being selfish, but I wanted my mom for me, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I thought that by becoming a good student, you know, that she will like me.
Right.
And
was that the case?
No. No. And so it was, how can I say this? It wasn't like that, but I did pretty well in school. I was mainly an A student, like I said. My first time that I remember being depressed was actually in the sixth grade. I went and I spoke to a teacher about, you know, that I wanted to kill myself, to be honest. And I was not even 11 years old. But the shock of just, I guess it was there that I didn't want to be here. I didn't want to be here anymore. I miss where I was from, you know. Right. We didn't bring anything with us, just la ropa que traíamos and the cambio that we had to dress all in black. But that was it. I didn't bring anything. Like, no one really asked me.
Right.
No one asked me. They just said, tomorrow you're leaving. And yes, I was really excited. But once I was here, it was nothing like I had expected or imagined. And so, yeah, that's when I said that. And once again, my mother got really upset at me. And, you know, then it was just, things got really bad. And then we experienced some child abuse in terms of her husband towards my twin and I. And then, you know, we were separated. And then, you know, just my sister left the house to marry because she just wanted to get out. And I myself stayed longer till 26. And it was because my mom had another child, and, you know, I helped to raise her. And the relationship with my mom and I is, it's not strong. Mm. It's not a good one. I know she's there, and I know she will help me out. But, you know, she decided to choose her husband, you know, than us. And so I felt a lot of the times that, you know, she left us out there and she made that choice. And then we come here to live with her and she made another choice to choose him over us. And so it just made it really difficult. Now that I'm a mom, she's a great grandmother. I don't know if you can understand this, but she's a great grandmother. And she loves my boys. And because she loves them and because I see how good she is with her, it you know, the void that I have, that emptiness, you know, it gets fulfilled by what she gives to them. And so I try to have a relationship with her because of my kids. And my mom and I, our relationship is, we are able to talk about Mexico, you know? So my twin wants nothing to do with Mexico. She's never been there. She never wants to go back. She never really wrote letters. She never really talks to them. Nothing. She's completely, she wants nothing to do. I, on the other hand, have always kept in touch. And so my mom and I have that connection. Mm-hmm. So we're able to talk about mi tía, mi tío, mi abuela, lo que está pasando aquí, allá, you know. But when it comes to us, no.
Not yet.
No, we don't have that. When it comes to my boys, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, but us, no. Yeah.
Well, hopefully at some point, can address.
Hopefully.
Yeah. It takes a lot of work, I think.
Yeah.
You know better than me. Yeah. How much of a person takes to be able to address those.
Yeah.
Issues, those feelings, those repressed emotions.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. That's very personal and intimate. Thank you for opening up to me and sharing that experiences. So I learned about a lot of cool stuff and your family, but tell me about the neighborhood. You came to Long Beach and then you stay in Long Beach, or did you?
Yeah, so we stayed in Long Beach pretty much. I finished eighth grade here, here in LA. So pretty much we got there. We got there in July. Sorry, I did finish. I did a whole year at elementary. It was here that I did only the last 6 months of eighth grade here. And I did it at Carver Middle School. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Carver. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So it was a big difference.
Really?
So my mom and her husband, they used to live pretty much... it was an okay neighborhood. You know, it was clean. Some of our neighbors were white, Asian. You know, I remember that there were people from Honduras, you know, and it was just a mix of people. But it was clean. It was nice. The school that I went to, Franklin Middle School, was less than a block. So it was like an easy walk. And, you know, there was kids, you know, who were white, and it was a mixed group. So that was nice. And then there's something about Long Beach that I really like. I still hope to one day live in Long Beach because I really like it. And I don't know if it's because it was the first place that I went to live. But in Nayarit, we are known for the beaches. Mm-hmm. And I could tell you that I'm a beach girl at heart, you know. No salíamos de las playas. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Long Beach, the beach, was only at a walking distance from my mom's house, it almost became like an escape, you know. Mm-hmm. And so... I like Long Beach. I really do. It whenever I drive by there, it just brings a sense of calmness, you know? It really does. So what was it? 1989, so 1992 maybe. We moved to LA, and that was because my stepfather had gotten a new job, and you know, it was closer to here. His stepsisters had bought property. And they had offer, you know, it was like a, not a triplex, but, you know, sort of like a four different houses, quadruplex. And so they offered for him to live in one of the houses for a cheaper rent. And so that's the reason why we moved. The neighborhood was dirtier. The neighborhood was mainly at that time, African-American and Latino. There was no white, no Asian, nothing from a different culture. It's just Mexican from what I remember, African-American. And then we went to Carver, where I finished eighth grade. And it was the first time that I got bullied. Mm-hmm. It was the first time that I experienced that racial difference with the, you know, African-American girls. Mm-hmm. It was the first time I saw cholos, you know, cholillas. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just there. I was exposed to so much that I did not see
before
at the other school, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I saw the ditching. I saw the girls would change clothes, you know, to something more revealing. It was just a lot. It was quite a bit of a change. Mm-hmm. From there, we went to Jefferson High School, Thomas Jefferson High School, and that's where I did my high school. And it was pretty much the same thing. It was pretty much the same type of behavior, the same type of students. I was lucky enough. Like I said, ninth grade was when they tested me to find out if I was still in ESL or in regular classes. I don't know how I did it, but I was lucky enough to pass the test, and I was put in regular classes, but at the same time, I was put in AP classes. Mm-hmm. And I really don't know what happened, Gloria, but it was like all of a sudden there was a click where all of a sudden I remember understanding everything that people will say. It's like, I don't know what happened. Uh-huh. I really don't know. I can't tell you that it took this time. No, it's like, mm-hmm. like it was like an overnight kind of thing mm-hmm. where, oh, I understand perfectly what you're saying. Right. And I was lucky yeah. enough that I was placed in, like I said, in that level of classes. And at that school, they had different programs, and I got put in Early College Academy. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so the students that I was with, they were the students that were there for an actual education. You know, yes. they were very competitive, really studious. And so I was among them. And so I continued to study, and I did pretty well. You know, I did pretty well. I'm not saying that I'm smart, because I'm not. The SAT scores were horrible. But, I managed to graduate, and I was the 10th student of the class, of the whole 1997 class.
Huge accomplishment.
Yeah, but to my parents, it was just like whatever. Mm-hmm. I did apply to colleges, and I got accepted to UC Santa Cruz. Okay. And that was the school that I wanted to go, but unfortunately, mm-hmm. How was I going to do that?
So you did apply.
I did end up applying at the end, because someone from UCLA came over and started talking to us about colleges, and mm-hmm. I told him that I didn't have papers, and so he was the one that said, apply anyway. And he encouraged me, and mm-hmm. I remember my teachers were helping the students with their application, mm-hmm. with their, essay. And so they helped me, and I got into that one, and I got into, I don't remember where else, but specifically I know it was that one. And I remember getting a few letters from Yale University, and I was just so excited. I mean, I never applied there, but the fact that, that they show interest in you, right?
So, yes.
So, yeah. So,
yeah, this little girl from Nayarit got a letter from Dale.
Right? Yes, saying, we would love to have you. Please apply.
Yes, yeah. It feels good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, this person from UCLA came to Jefferson?
Yes.
To Jefferson, and then did they walk you through the process of applying as yes. an undocumented student?
No, I mean, they just said to try and apply. And yes, I think they did, because I was able to get the fee waivers mm-hmm. for the applications mm-hmm. and I submitted them. I didn't apply to as many schools because, again, I just didn't know that. I knew already that I was not mm-hmm. going to go, but I did it just to kind of feel like the rest of my classmates, like I was a part of it. And so when I got accepted to UC Santa Cruz, like everybody knew, and it was exciting, but deep down I knew that that was never going to happen. And it was really depressing. Yeah. Yeah. And what did you ask?
If the person, do you remember yes. the person's name from the UCLA?
I think his first name was Hugo. Era un señor chaparrito, morenito. I will say that he was probably either from Oaxaca. Not that I'm trying
to be judgmental. But did they even offer you options of how to pay in actually going to one of the schools that you were accepted to?
No.
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 No one approached you. And you didn't either.
I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I really didn't know. I mean, once the college counselor said, there's nothing we can do for you, you need to, there's nothing. So I just walked out, and it wasn't until he came in. I met him at the college center. And so I spoke to him and I told him my situation. And he said, well, I'm having a talk about college applications and everything. Perhaps you should listened to it, and my mom and I went, and you know, he encouraged us, encouraged me to apply. And I did apply to UCLA. I applied to UC Santa Cruz. I don't remember which other ones, but I didn't apply for too many. Mm-hmm. But yeah, UCLA said no, and yeah, but no, he didn't mention anything. All that was said was scholarships. And I remember applying to several scholarships. In particular, I remember there was one to apply as twins that you could probably get the scholarship. And we did get it, but it was only like $500, you know? Mm-hmm. I was able to go to Trade Tech because I, in some ways, was able to get some assistance. There was, I was part of a, I was part of the Key Club. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. So it was one of the groups at school at Jeff, which was mainly helping out the community. Mm-hmm. And we did a lot of community service. And so the our leader or our mentor from that program basically decided to give me $150 scholarship for every semester. And so that really helped a bit, you know, because I myself didn't know how to pay for it. The way they did it with Leticia A, I can't remember the other part, but we were giving a student ID number, which was 0000. But it was enough to pay as a resident and not as a non-resident. So that saved us money. And I don't know if we qualified for some financial assistance, but we didn't have to pay that much, I remember. And at that time, 97, I mean, it was $11 a unit. It was more affordable than what it is now. Yeah. And so it was neat, yeah.
And then you learned about the Trade Tech through your teacher.
Woodshop teacher, yes. Teacher. He referred me to a lady that he knew that could help me, and I went to see her, and she did. She was the one that helped me. And we got in, and then, you know, second year, I will go visit her often. And, you know, one day I just said, you know what, I'm done. I'm tired. I want to transfer. I want to go somewhere else, but I don't know how to do it. And she actually recommended somebody else at Cal State LA to help me get in. And that's how I got in. So the people, both persons at Trade Tech and Cal State LA were African-American.
Okay.
And so to me, that meant something, you know. Yeah. It's like, wow, they were the ones that me dieron la mano. And I was able to get in, and esta persona worked at the EOP office, and I kept in contact with him for a long time. And again, I was giving another student ID number, which was a lot of zeros. And it wasn't until AB 540 came in, which I think was mostly towards my graduate school, that's how I tried to apply, and I got in as an AB 540 student. What did they do with paperwork? I don't really know, you know, but they were the ones that were able to move things for me to be able to go to school. There was hardly any scholarships, you know, at that time. Again, the movement for AB 540 had not started yet until I think it was graduate school that I started to hear more.
Yeah. So I want to backtrack a little to when... Who was the first person that you disclosed your undocumented status to in the school system?
It was my woodshop teacher. And then it was the college counselor. Well, it was the college counselor. And then it was the woodshop teacher. But he was the one that helped me.
What was that? Was that hard?
It's just embarrassing.
It was embarrassing.
It's embarrassing.
Why?
Again, I knew that I was undocumented, but I didn't know what that meant. Mm-hmm. And once I found out, it was just embarrassing and sad because, the teacher had asked me about where was I going because he saw that potential in me, right? And to say nowhere. And, you know, he's like, why? And just to open up about that. And he was just like, oh, I see. I see. Well, let me see what I can do for you. And that was it. His name is Mr. McCarthy. Yeah. I was bad in woodshop. Ni sabía lo que. You know, I was scared of the machines. I don't know what kind of potential he saw because
he probably did not want you to go that route.
Because I could barely make a little piece of wood like this.
This kid's gonna kill herself with the machine. Please go to college.
Yeah. No. I was really bad at woodshop, so I don't know what he saw, but he really wanted to help me. There was a student behind me, total gangster. And no one really will talk to him. No one will really do anything with him. And I started talking to him and I started helping him, you know, not with cutting or anything, but more of the written stuff. And I think the teacher saw that, and that kid ended up doing well in the class, you know. Mm-hmm. He was motivated and he thanked me for being able to do that, mm-hmm. being able to connect. I'm open the door because it's hot.
Okay, so now we got to the point where you are coming to, well, how was the experience at the trade school, at the tech trade? What did you study there?
I just did the liberal arts.
Oh, okay.
You know, I just got my AA in liberal arts, and mm-hmm. I did all of the GEs, and it was pretty good. I mean, I'm not good in math. but okay. You know, the experience itself was pretty good. I kept myself active, and you know, I tried to do well in classes. Mm-hmm. I actually went in as a major in, I wanted to do international business. Okay. And that's all that I wanted to do. But I started taking the business classes, the economics classes, and I did not enjoy them. I was barely passing them. And I said, no, this is not for me. And so Trade Tech was able to help me to find out what I really wanted to do. And so I went to see a counselor. They did the Myers personality test. I'm not sure if you've heard of it or done it. Do you know what it is?
I think I heard about it, but I don't think that I like a standardized test to measure who you should be, or, you know.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Well, they did it, and I think it was pretty accurate. And I also got involved at church, and there was a point where I didn't know what I wanted to do because I was actually thinking of missionary work. Mm. And so at the end, I didn't dare do that. Again, you know, por los papeles también. I was going to go. I was not going to come back. I was not going to be able to see my family. And so I decided not to. And so I asked myself, you know, what is the best thing, you know, next to wanting to become a do mission work. And it was either a nurse or a social worker. And I knew that working with body fluids, it's not my thing. So I went into social work. Okay. Yeah, but it was a good experience. You know, I learned a lot, and I had some really good professors. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm glad that you had the good experience there.
Yeah. And at the time, I think it was, I think a lot has changed when it comes mm-hmm. to education, but I think a lot of the classes were mixed with a lot of people from Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. And so they were very studious, you know, they mm-hmm. were trying to make sure that they made something of themselves.
And then you cut up to it?
Yeah. It was competitive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and tell me a little bit about church. You didn't mention it before. Was it a Christian church, a Catholic church?
Catholic church. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I didn't get involved till after I graduated high school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And why did you feel that called to the missionary work?
So I got really involved with church. Okay. We actually, my friend and I started the youth group. And so we were there for a few years. I met some wonderful people. I met my padrinos, and they are like my second parents, to be honest. And, I got so involved to the point where we had misioneras que venían y daban la clase. And so
the youth program?
The youth group and just in general at church and everything. And so, it was fascinating to see their lifestyle, and to be around them. They were so wise and smart. And, they just had, in my eyes, a very perfect life, in my eyes. And so I think I just liked it, and I wanted to do that.
And why did you see that they had a perfect life? Was it that they were traveling a lot, or
the fact that they were, I guess it was a calm, serene life. Not too many problems, at least in my view. They just carry themselves very, very calm, very serene, very simple. And that was attractive to me. Right. And they were helping others.
I guess at this point you have that conflict of wanting to further education, but not being able to, right? Yes.
That too. But it will give me a chance to travel. And I even thought that maybe they could even help me with the papers, right? Mm-hmm. But again, I was going to stay in that kind of lifestyle. But but at the end it was boyfriend and family that stopped me.
Things happen for a reason.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. So now we are, would you graduate, you transfer from the trip to Cal State LA because they found a way to
help you the system. Yeah.
So tell me how it go, Cal State LA.
It was a shock.
What?
It was a shock. I mean, it was so different from Trade Tech. It was, the campus was so much bigger. I mean, I just felt really intimidated by everything and everyone. I had a couple of people that I knew that were there from high school. My best friend was there, so that brought a sense of comfort.
Okay.
But it was just very intimidating, very intimidating for me. I managed to get a job there at, I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's no longer there. Dolcini's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was able to get a job with them through a friend of mine. And, I got the job. And then I told people at Surge. And then some of the people started working there when some of us, will leave. And so Dolcini's became a sanctuary in some ways for a lot of us, because it gave us a part-time job and we were able to get at least 50% off on the food,
that's good.
I mean,
I
was there from, my job with them, I worked with them for 6 years. And I will start
time.
Yeah, I will start at 6:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And I wouldn't get home from my studies probably until 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And so Dolcini's was what fed me.
Right. Well, they, you were gone, they were out of the house.
Yeah, they fed me all those years. And thanks to that job, I paid for my education. That's how I paid for my whole education. Now, it doesn't compare to what it is now. I do want to emphasize that.
Yes.
But, I will say that my whole education maybe cost me between, at the most, $20,000.
That's a good deal.
Yes.
Good price.
To get my master's degree and my bachelor's, yes. But it was Dolcini that helped me to pay for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I worked there. I saved the money. I lived at home. I lived at home until I graduated from my master's degree, and then I got married and moved in with my husband. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have too many bills. So whatever I made at Dolcini's, it was for me, and I will save it for school. And when I took that year off to come back to the master's program, it was because I wanted to save. Mm-hmm. So I could have enough for the master's program, but at the same time, enough so that, I mean, I couldn't get everything, but I was always one semester ahead, you know, when it came to payments. So I always had enough for the next semester.
Right. Yeah.
And so I wanted to have enough to cover me so that whatever I made was enough for the following semester.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's how I did it. And, once again, after I almost right before graduation and from my bachelor's, I got really depressed because here we go again. We're graduating and I'm not going to be able to do anything with this degree.
Right.
And I got really depressed. And at that time, I was able to talk to a good professor of mine that I still keep in touch with. And that I actually spoke to her, and we were 2 hours on the phone catching up. And she was the first person that I told about my situation. And she was very, and she was really supportive because she was asking me, what was I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to her, I was able to, she connected me to another professor who had an adult day healthcare. Mm-hmm. In Baldwin Park.
Mm-hmm.
And I did my 1 year of service with him. Mm-hmm. So that I wouldn't lose what I had learned. You know what I mean? So that will be my practicum, right? Because I took a whole year off. And I learned
paid?
A lot.
Did it pay you?
No, it was not paid. It was just something that I was doing.
Okay. Okay.
So that I could feel like I was doing something. Mm-hmm. And he was really helpful, and he was the one that pushed me to get into the graduate program. He's like, what else are you going to do?
Right.
Give it a try. You don't know what's going to change. It's really going to help you. And so I actually applied for the master's program, and he helped me with the application. Uh-huh. And then I got in and I was there, and the same teacher, the same professor that I told in 2003 became my professor. And so she's the one that, kept me strong. And towards the end, towards thesis time, when mm-hmm. it was time for thesis, I once again, towards the last year, I got depressed again, because what am I going to do? You know, everybody was talking about they were going to go to Italy, they were going to go to Cabos, they were going to go to all these places once they graduated. And I was just like, yeah. And I became really depressed because I didn't know what I was going to do. And so I talked to my professor, and she was the one that mentioned AB 540. She said that there was a new group starting that she had heard, and you know, she wanted me to join.
Yeah, who's this professor?
Her name is Joanne Altschler, one of she's from the social work department.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how she found out, but but she told me that they met at Dolcini's. And sure enough, I went to their meeting, and I think it was Jose, Norma. I'm not sure who else was there, but that's how I got to know AB 540. And we started meeting at Dolcini's.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good place to stop.
The patio. Yeah.
Yeah.